And we're talking about dark shadows this hour, and we're going to take your phone calls from all around the planet when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie with Catherine Lee Scott and Frank Borzilleri as we talk about dark shadows return to Collinwood. So, Catherine, what do you think about vampires now? Really think about them.
I don't spend a lot of time thinking about vampires, and I don't watch all of the new vampire shows that are on television. But, you know, I really do think that Jonathan Frid was the granddaddy of the contemporary vampire. I mean, he really created such a multi-layered character, you know, not just the evil presence in the cape swooping in to bite somebody's neck. He really is, as Frank said earlier, created a character with some humanity. And so I think that all of these other, Twilight, whatever you want to name, I think the relationship between the vampire and his unrequited love, you know, the only way to take the bride is to put the terrible curse on her as well of being a vampire.
Sure. And Frank, what about Jonathan's career after Dark Shadow stopped airing? Did it change? Did it boom, or was he so typecasted, nothing happened?
Well, Jonathan was a Shakespearean actor for many years before he got the part in Dark Shadows. And as he tells the story, he had taken a teaching job on the West Coast when he got the call to be a vampire in this soap opera that he hadn't heard of. And he was supposed to be off the show in about 6 weeks. They were going to put a stake through his heart. And he became so popular that, as Dan Curtis tells it, he had to think of a way to keep this guy alive. So Jonathan Frid indeed saved the show and really created this role of the reluctant vampire. After Dark Shadows, he did a couple of movies. He did something called The Devil's Daughter, which was a big TV movie of the week, a horror movie with Shelley Winters and Abe Vigoda. And thereafter, Jonathan, in addition to just promoting Dark Shadows, he did his one-man shows where he would... it was part comedy and part quoting literature, quoting Shakespeare. He was very talented at that. And then also did that at Dark Shadows festivals where he would give his lectures and one-man shows. He never went on to a big career as a big Hollywood star. But I don't think he minded being typecast. He did so much over the years to promote Dark Shadows. He even went to South America to promote the Spanish version of Dark Shadows. So, as Catherine said, just a really beloved person, not only by the stars, but by the fans. And we really think that Jonathan does not, and we're trying to change this, but he does not get the credit he deserves for really reinventing the whole vampire thing. Even Anne Rice has said was a fan of Dark Shadows as a child. Every vampire that has come after Jonathan Frid's Barnabas Collins has had this other dimension. This torment that they're feeling, this reluctance of victimizing these women. And that was really invented by Jonathan Frid and really one of his first victims, Catherine Lee Scott.
Yeah, and I have to tell you, on the set at Pinewood, it was an extraordinary moment when I stood next to Jonathan Frid and he met Johnny Depp for the first time. We all did. And Jonathan was standing there with his wolf's head cane and Johnny Depp completely in character with his wolf's head cane. And Jonathan just gazed at Johnny and scrutinized his appearance, and then finally he said, "I see you've done the hair a few more spikes." and Johnny turned to Jonathan and just said, "We're doing things a little differently." And I seized that opportunity to thank Johnny Depp for the very generous comments that he had made about Jonathan's, you know, originating the role of Barnabas Collins, and because he had said some really wonderful things. And both Tim Burton, who was standing behind Johnny, they both looked at Jonathan and said, "We wouldn't be here without you."
That's
so it was in a way a passing of the torch. And I've, you know, it's also been said that perhaps Jonathan didn't even know who Johnny Depp was. Well, he certainly did. And I think he wanted very much to be there and to see, you know, what was happening. So it was an amazing. I mean, it's really something that I had to put in the book, and it had to be a story that was preserved.
It's electrifying. Mm-hmm. I think everything that you all went through. And probably is not to be duplicated.
No, it's not. I'll tell you one thing that I do want to throw in here, and that is that I really don't think that the media, Johnny Depp gets it, Tim Burton gets it, but the media doesn't. For some reason that they feel that they need to malign the original show by calling it, you know, shoddy production values, and, you know, melodramatic and acting and so on. The point is, we did 1,225 episodes live, and 45 years later, people still care, and we're still attracting new audience members.
Oh, sure.
And at the time, in its heyday, we attracted 20 million viewers. So we were hardly a fringe taste. We were hardly, you know, a cult among outsiders. We were mainstream.
I still like looking at old TV shows of spaceships with string, and you can see
there
it.
There you go.
You know what?
Well, you know, one of our cutting-edge props was a bat dangling on a piece of string from a fishing pole, and the prop man would kind of jiggle it. So, you know, we were very innovative with our use of chroma key before green screen. There were so many things. Try to think of one other daytime soap that had original music composed by somebody like Bob Cobert.
That's right.
And it was orchestral music. And the sets designed by Cy Thomashoff, the costumes that Ramsey Mostaler came up with, this was not cheap production values, not by a long shot.
I think that Catherine's right about the media. They just constantly get it wrong. I think it could be a case that the journalists just didn't see it. It's ridiculous to call Dark Shadows poorly done and to call it camp. It was never camp.
Catherine
will tell you the actors all played those scenes straight. They played it for real. And to the extent that someone got a laugh out of Dark Shadows because a styrofoam tombstone would be knocked down as one of the actors is walking through the cemetery, for a dream sequence, the cameraman Stuart Goodman said that for a dream sequence, he would just put Vaseline around the edges of the camera.
That's
give
right.
It sort of a dream look. But it's just ridiculous to have those kinds of criticisms of Dark Shadows. It has stood the test of time. Whether the special effects are somewhat archaic does not take away from the brilliant.
You know, I'll tell you, George. There was an L.A. Times writer who was on the set at the same time we were there. We were introduced to him, but you know, he's too busy to talk with us. So he writes an article, and I actually took such issue with it that I wrote a letter to the editor, which was published in full.
Good for you.
But the problem is that it's a wire, it goes on the wire service. And there are newspapers in, you know, Chicago, Minneapolis, Cleveland, picking up the story, but they're not picking up your letter to the editor.
No, it is
so absolutely maddening.
I would put Dark Shadows on a par in terms of that television feeling, The Twilight Zone.
Yeah.
You know,
or Star Trek, which started
or Star Trek, exactly.
The original 97.
You know, everybody was working in an era of television that did not have the benefit of high technology and computer imaging or any of that. And you had to improvise.
Yeah.
You had to make it work, and you did. And I think anybody who doesn't understand that or appreciate how the evolution of media has occurred, they're off base. Let's take some calls. You got a lot of people who want to talk with both of you, so we'll pick things up. We're going to start off by going to Dalton, Georgia. Chris is with us on the Wild Card line. Hey, Chris, thanks for calling.
Good morning. Thank you for having me on.
Sure thing.
I love the show as a child, and I'll be 50 soon. I've just got a question about what you were talking about earlier with the physics and the time travel and all that. And I was wondering how that played into the character introduction of the werewolf character and how the storyline developed as a result of that. It seems like there was some overlapping between Barnabas and the gentleman who played the werewolf, and the direction that the plot took with the silver bullet. I remember that episode where they went to shoot him. I just got so many thoughts and questions, but I just wanted to know about the timeline and how it developed with the werewolf character in relation to Barnabas, and how that, the direction went with that.
The original werewolf character was Quentin Collins' David Selby. The only relation to time travel was that the character of Barnabas Collins went back to 1897 and to sort of put a stop to the treachery that Quentin Collins was committing in the present time as a ghost. So he traveled back to 1897, and then Quentin was cursed by his sister-in-law, Grayson Hall, playing the part of Magda the Gypsy, cursed him as a werewolf. And what's interesting is that when David Selby or any other character would turn into the werewolf, the actual werewolf was not played by the same actor. It was played by a stuntman named Alex Stevens. So as David Selby, who's probably about 6'3", would turn into the werewolf, he would then be about 5'9". And he always joked that when he became a werewolf, he became shorter. But that's the only relation between the time travel and the werewolf character.
Okay, let's go to Toronto, Canada now on the international line. Hi, Terry. Go ahead.
Hi, guys. Hi, Catherine. Hi, Frank.
Hi.
I'm just wondering, are either of you familiar with the new Dark Shadows comic book? The storyline in it seems to be very true, or close to true, to the original storyline. And I was just wondering if either of you were familiar with it and what you might think of it.
Well, actually, there is a whole series of books now, wonderful hardcover books about these comic strips, and they've all been very handsomely reproduced. Frank, what do you know about this?
I don't. I have the comic book, almost the textbook that you put out, Catherine. I have.
Well,
that
was Kenneth Bald, and he did the comic strips, and they were absolutely wonderful. That's the Dark Shadows comic strip book.
Right.
But Hermes Press has also put out a number of books about with these Dark Shadows comic strips.
Okay. Yeah, but I'm not familiar with the most.
This is a new one, yeah.
Yeah,
I would be happy to see that it's following the original storyline. You mean Barnabas being released from the coffin?
Oh.
Is that the original storyline the caller is talking about?
I think it is.
I think it is.
And you know what? It's interesting that in this era of television, you remember all the TV shows that were based around vampires and werewolves? You had people in Detroit, Sir Graves, Ghastly. We had one of my boyhood idols, Morgus the Magnificent, doing his thing.
Goodness.
So you had all these characters doing their thing, too, and it worked. Catherine, did anybody win Emmys for this?
Oh, no. No, we were daytime television.
Okay.
And also, when you're doing things that are genre-based, whether it's at books or television or film or whatever, you very, very seldom win awards. It's not award-winning,
right.
Material.
Right.
But nobody, no. The answer is no.
And how about guests? I mean, did anybody get invited to go to the Tonight Show? Well, I guess they wouldn't.
Yes, Laura Parker went on the Tonight Show and she bit Johnny Carson and she had fangs.
I bet he
and
loved that.
I think I was on the Dating Game and I did a couple of shows. I think David Selby did. Certainly Jonathan Frid was on I've Got a Secret. And Joan Bennett was wonderful. She went off to do several of these talk shows at the time. But it was a different era. You didn't have the incredible focus on celebrities and all of the reality shows where you go on and talk about yourself.
I mean, it's huge. I mean, Catherine, you've been through all kinds of things in Hollywood and in television. I mean, your reaction when the Kardashians get $40 million for their reality show, I mean, is that crazy?
I will not speak their name. I will not make reference to them. I just think the whole thing is completely idiotic.
Truly out of control.
Totally out of control. I don't even care to talk about it.
Let's go to Parlane, California, west of the Rockies. Jim, you're with us. Hi, Jim.
Hi. Honored to talk to you.
Sure,
Catherine.
Thing. Glad you're aboard. Go ahead, Jim.
Yes. On the one where you and Barnabas went back in time, as far as in that painting, and he was supposed to go ahead and meet you, and went to that worshippers or whatever way and got him. What was supposed to happen from there about what took him over?
Oh, you know, I don't blame you for asking that. I'm just the wrong person to ask.
Frank, could you jump in on this?
Yeah, please.
If I understood the question correctly, he was asking about Barnabas going back in time to meet, when you say meet you, meaning Catherine as Josette, is that what you're talking
about? There was a painting involved or something, right? Did you materialize through some kind of portrait, Catherine?
Well, I did. And again, that was our use of chroma key where I stepped out of the portrait. And we had several special effects like that, but I stepped out of the portrait. And it was one of the... The fans absolutely loved that because it was Josette coming to life, and it was Barnabas Cullen's hope that that she would join him, but again I'm so sorry I'm not very deft at answering questions having to do with the storyline.
Yeah, I think the caller may have a couple of storylines confused. There were many plot lines that had to do with paintings, my goodness. And the one that Catherine's talking about was actually trailblazing because the first supernatural character in Dark Shadows was not the vampire, but it was the ghost of Josette, played by Catherine Lee Scott. And, in fact, it would be months later that Catherine would actually take on the role. And Catherine, you were the first actor who actually took on a second role, isn't that right?
Yeah, and you know, George, if I could just indulge you for a moment, you asked me a question at the very top of the show about how I came to play another character.
Right.
And what happened is that I stopped by the studio one day when I wasn't working to pick up scripts, and I saw the producer and the wardrobe woman clothing this dress dummy in tattered lace. And they had a fan on her and some green light, and the cameraman was trying to create effects. And I said, what is this? And they said, well, it's a ghost of Josette Dupre, and she's jumped off Widow's Hill. What do you think? And I said, well, it looks like a clothes dummy. And they said, would you step in for the clothes dummy then? Well, everybody said I was crazy to do it, but I thought it would be fun. So they put the dress on me, and the makeup man took a ping pong ball and he painted an eyeball on it, and he glued that to my cheek, and I had this horrible wig that was mushed up with baby oil and talcum powder.
I remember seeing that. Hold on for a sec. We'll come back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, next hour, open lines here on Coast to Coast AM, Friday night into Saturday morning. When we come back, though, more on Dark Shadows and your phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. We're with Catherine Lee Scott, also known as Maggie Evans and Josette Dupre. And, of course, Frank Borzilleri, also known as Frank Borzilleri. Simple as that. Catherine, you were telling us about how you were made up as a ghost and then the breakup.
Yes, well, you know, I stood in for the dummy. And Dan Curtis, of course, when he saw the ghost animated, because I was able to raise my arms and the fan blowing in my eyes made them water, and he felt that it was so touching and he said it's perfect, and I said, well, do I get paid extra? And he said, no, we can still use the dummy. In any case, I stood in for the dummy several more times, and then when they decided to bring the ghost of Josette Dupre to real life, I was given the role, and that was when they hired Laura Parker to play Angelique, because they brought in Josette Dupre.
She was a witch, right?
She was a witch, and I was brought in as Josette Dupre, who is a countess from the island of Martinique, and she and her father, André, again played by David Ford, arrived with her lady's maid, who was Angélique, and she was very jealous of Josette. Josette had come to marry Barnabas, and that's when she put the curse on Barnabas. I've always felt that love triangle, the Barnabas, Josette, Angélique love triangle, was really the heart and soul of Dark Shadows.
Yes, indeed.
I think so. Let's take some more final calls here. Fast couple hours with you two. Moss Point, Mississippi, east of the Rockies. Hey, Mark, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Good evening. It's evening here.
Sure
it's Scott, Keeper of the Flame, Dark Shadows, the only soap opera that never had a regular hospital set. I am collecting the DVDs. My wife and I are sharing them with our six-year-old son. He loves it. My question is, was there ever any location filming? During the first year, it seemed like characters like Josette and David, Matthew, the handyman, could be seen going in and out of the old house. So I was wondering, did you ever do location filming?
I never did, but Lewis Edmonds, young David Hennessy, and the woman who played Victoria, Alexandra Molka, they went on location. They were up in Newport filming. But none of us ever went on location. None of the rest of us. Everything was done in the studio, and then it was just done with process photography.
Right. The caller is right. It was that first year where there was some stock footage of, for example, Louis Edmonds driving on the streets of Collinwood. He was actually driving in Essex, Connecticut, walking into the Essex, Connecticut post office, which in the show was the exterior of the Collinsport Police Department. The hotel was also located in Essex, Connecticut, and then in Newport only. But Catherine's right. They basically used those exterior shots only in the first year, and they kind of stopped that, especially after the show went to color. There was never any exterior live action.
I don't think it was missed either.
No.
I think we created our own little universe, and we didn't need any exteriors.
What's become of the mansion now? Is it still out there in Maine?
You mean the real mansion in Newport, Rhode Island?
Yes.
In fact, a bunch of us fans stay there on the Halloween weekend and on Memorial Day weekend. The mansion is now owned, since 1974, it's owned by the Carey family. And for many years, they leased it out as a dorm for Salve Regina, which is an old girls' college. And they no longer do that, so the house is, they still rent it out to people. But, it's still there, and still it's a joy to be there. It's a big thrill to be there as a fan. You know, you saw this mansion on TV as a child in Dark Shadows, and to actually be there and staying there is a lot of fun.
There's another house as well, the Lockwood Matthews mansion. And that's where we shot all of the scenes for House of Dark Shadows, the feature film. And it's where Josette marries Barnabas and then, and then is killed with the crossbow. And all of that was filmed at the Lockwood Matthews. And that's still there. And every once in a while they have a sort of a fan reunion there.
These are really old houses, aren't they?
Oh, yes. Absolutely.
Classics. Did they have basements?
Probably not the one in Newport, because most of those places were summer structures, really, even though they were, very grand mansions.
Yeah.
I would guess that the Lockwood Matthews probably did. I certainly was not down there. I mean, the Lockwood Matthews was virtually in ruins when we were working there.
Right, and also, Catherine, the main house was the Lyndhurst Mansion for...
Yes, the Lyndhurst Mansion is...
Harrytown.
That is truly famous. It was
and
the old Jay Gould estate
July,
in Harrytown. And on July 28th, I hope a lot of your listeners will be interested in attending the Dark Shadows Festival. It's the weekend of July 28th. If you go online to the Dark Shadows Festival, you can find out about it. But it's going to be a big tribute to Jonathan Frid. He was meant to be our guest of honor, And Laura Parker and I will be there, of course, and a lot of the other Dark Shadows actors. And it'll be held in the town of Terrytown, and we will actually be at the old estate.
The Lyndhurst Mansion.
The Lyndhurst Mansion.
How many people attend any of these events these days? I know.
Oh my gosh, we used to have close to 5,000.
Wow.
I think that we've had. Oh my gosh, we used to sit and sign autographs until 4 in the morning and wonder what we were thinking. I guess at the last one, it's as much as the hotel can hold, put it that way.
Yeah.
They have to draw a limit at some point. But I would say that we have 2 or 3,000.
He was 87 and a half, Jonathan was, when he died, very close to my father, who was 88 when he passed away a few months ago.
Yeah.
And,
yeah. Oh, I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He fell. You know.
Oh.
It's those falls that do it.
Well, that's what happened with Jonathan.
Same thing.
Yeah. Yeah, he had a fall. And I think so often, people say that, you know, somebody falls and breaks their hip. I sometimes think that they break a hip and fall. When you're in fragile health, a fall can do it.
Oh my gosh, break bones, everything. Yeah. Let's go to Portland, Oregon. Cindy's with us, first time caller. Hi, Cindy, go ahead.
Hi. You mentioned earlier about kids who rush home from school to watch Dark Shadows. Well, I was that kid. I'm telling you, even today, just mentioning Dark Shadows is the best conversation starter in social situations. It brings people together.
Yes.
Because everyone just is so excited and breathlessly to tell about their reminiscing about Dark Shadows.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, you know, that's so true. That's always the reaction. Wow, you're a Dark Shadows fan? I remember that as a kid. It's a great conversation starter. It brings
Absolutely.
People together.
Yeah. And the comment you said before is so true and so heartfelt for me because Dark Shadows is not campy. For me, even today, it's a serious story.
Right.
It sure is. And you know what we're going to do for you, by the way, Cindy? My one copy of the Dark Shadows Return to Collinwood book, I'm going to put you on hold, get your address. I'm going to have producer Tom send it to you.
Oh, right? My God, thank you. I was going to go right out to the bookstore tomorrow and look for it.
Uh-oh, I just cut into one of your sales, Kathy.
No, that's okay. I'm delighted that you're getting a copy. The book is apparently, according to the distributor, flying off the shelves.
Perfect.
In Barnes & Noble. It's in all of the bookstores, and it's on
Amazon.
You can get it on Amazon.
Oh,
and you can also go to my website, KatherineLeeScott.com, KatherineLeeScott.com. And if you order off my website, of course, you can buy it by PayPal and just tell me how you want your book signed because I would be delighted to sign it any way you want.
All right, Cindy, I'm going to put you on hold, okay?
I have to buy some as gifts then.
Yeah, oh, that's right. That's a good idea. So you're on hold. Tom will get your address, and we'll get this book out to you. By the way, who did the cover? Nice job.
Oh, she is the most wonderful designer. Her name is Cheryl Carrington, and she's in Albuquerque, New Mexico. We work long distance, and she has designed the covers and the interior of all of my books. For the past, I would say, 10 years. She did the Bunny Years and, she did Dark Shadows Memory. She's done all of them.
Super. Let's go next. Phyllis is in Denver, Colorado. Hi, Phyllis. Go ahead.
Oh, for the good old days. I tell you, I had the best experience because the children would come in right after school to my house, all ages. I mean, little guys right on up to the older kids and watch Dark Shadows with me. It's been, and here I was enthralled. I was an adult, and all these kids, it reached everyone. We were all thrilled with it. And, you know, there was such stage presence, I don't know what it was, but I just fell in love. I was just mesmerized, Barnaby. Barnabas,
yeah.
Yes. He was absolutely something about that man. Were you all stage actors?
Yeah, we were. In fact, my only acting work prior to Dark Shadows was on stage, and all of the other actors were. In fact, Mitch Ryan left to do a play on Broadway, and I left for 4 months to do a play as well. We were all stage actors, and I think that's why we were able to work like a little repertory company.
Yes, and it just made all the difference, but there was just something about it that was, and to this day, and those children, all ages, we were all sitting there, absolutely, and every day look forward to that.
I hope one day you'll be able to come to a Dark Shadows festival, because you'll see the same
maybe
atmosphere.
I'm in my 70s, but, you know, I still just might make it.
Well, I wish you would, because I have to say, you would find a multi-generational audience. There are kids 9 and 10 years old, and there are grandmas and great-grandmas there.
Do you all get dressed up, Catherine?
No. Oh, we do not.
It's not like a Star Trek event, huh?
No, the fans.
We do
have a costume party and a contest. So the fans will dress up for that event and so on. And there's a little bit of dressing up like they do with Star Trek. I was in Star Trek as well, so I've been to a few of those festivals. But it's really, I've always thought that the Dark Shadows fans were a cut above. They were smart, intuitive. They
were ahead of the game, weren't
they? Well, they were, and they appreciated the fantasy, the romance, the horror elements. They just took it all in. And when we're asked questions at these festivals, they're always good ones. And it's not a surprise that Frank and so many others have become long-term friends.
Well, you know, it's like our listeners. I have such an utmost respect for them. And,
yeah.
You know, they are, look, they're smarter than I am. Let me tell you something. If you're not ready, if you don't have an answer, they'll get you because they know. I mean, they know government affairs. They know about the Federal Reserve. They know about ghosts and life after death. They talk about God. I mean, they are on it. You know, much like then your audience on Dark Shadows, same kind of thing.
Absolutely.
The Dark Shadows fans are very knowledgeable and very protective of the show, very proud of the show, very proud of the actors. And I would repeat that the fans really feel that the actors like Catherine, Lara Parker, Jonathan Frid, haven't really gotten the credit they deserved over the years. That they were responsible for this great, trailblazing show. It was just wonderful.
Karen's in Los Angeles and now on Coast to Coast. Hi, Karen. Go ahead.
Hi, George.
Hi.
Hi, Catherine. Hi. I'm sorry, I forgot your name.
Frank. Frank's the other one.
Frank. Yeah, Frank.
Better you forget his name than mine.
No, never forget your name, George. Never, ever.
What's your question?
Yeah, I had a question about, there was one episode that I remember seeing Jonathan Frid. He talked about it on a talk show, I think, where he forgot his fangs.
He forgot his fangs?
Yes. And they had held a pay trying to figure out what to do with it.
Oh, that's funny.
Well, you know, there were so many incidents like that. And I have to be honest with you. The one thing that Jonathan really hated was being photographed with the fangs. He did everything to avoid it. Mm-hmm. And of course, you couldn't talk with the fangs in your mouth.
Oh,
so
no.
We had three cameras, and one camera had to go on the other actor while Jonathan would reach in his pocket, get the fangs out, put them on,
smile.
And the camera would come back and he'd do his bite.
Mm.
But when it comes to the reluctant vampire, he was most reluctant when it came to using his fangs.
I'm sure.
With regard to the fangs, he complained that the director would always want him to open his mouth really wide and really show off those fangs. And he said, well, a vampire wouldn't really bite that way. And,
no.
And they said, well, but we want to get our money's worth out of these fangs and make sure that everybody sees them.
Catherine, who are the little kids in Dark Shadows, and what has become of them now?
Oh, there are three primary ones. Little David Hennessy was 12 years old when he was on the show. He's now a father of several children and runs several hotels
oh,
in South
great.
America. hugely successful. He was in the restaurant business. He's been in the hospitality business now all of his adult career. He gave up acting a long time ago. And I remember when he was a little boy, he and Sharon Smith, one of the little actress on the show, and also Denise Nickerson, they used to make sandwiches and food, and they would, you know, like kids have a lemonade stand.
Yeah.
Well, David Hennessy and these other two little girls did that, and it was so adorable, and it's not at all a surprise to any of us that David Hennessy would grow up to be a restaurateur and hotelier.
Yeah, or one of them invented the Burger King franchise or something.
You're right.
That's right. One of our friends, Billy Mumy, was in the Twilight Zone.
Oh, of course.
And, of course, he was Will Robinson and
yeah.
Those great, great, great old-time television shows. But he tells us that it's just remarkable thinking back at the days that he did these things. You know, he was the one who wished people into the cornfield.
Oh, yeah.
In the Twilight Zone. And then, you know, and he'll come on the show once in a while, and he'll do that.
Yeah. Well, you know, child actors, you know, are notorious for having unhappy adult lives. But I'm just so pleased to say that the Sharon Smith and Denise Nickerson, they come to the festivals. We've seen them over the years. You know, they're happy and living good lives. And we've never seen David Hennessy because he's, you know, living in South America. But by all accounts, a very happy young man.
Super. Frank, let me ask you, Frank, as the clock ticks here, your current book, Who Believes in Roswell, out? Is it out yet, or are you working on it?
Well, as you know, the first publicity I did for the book was in August of last year. I still think of it as a new book. Who Believes in Roswell, Discovering the Profile of the Roswell Believer, foreword written by George Norrie.
Mm-hmm.
It's always good when you have the foreword writer to your book is more famous than the author. So the book has done very well. It's out, I guess, whatever it is, 8 months now.
Were you going to update that?
Well, I'm going to update it online. I don't know that there's enough new information to have a second edition. But, yeah, I mean, I spent 2.5 years writing this book, researching the profile of those who believe and disbelieve in Roswell. So it's done well, and it was. What's great about the book is that it was unique. I mean, the Roswell story had been done to death, something that I wouldn't be doing again, but actually conducting survey of over 1,000 people, discovering the profile of the characteristics that a person has who believes and disbelieves in Roswell was original, which is why it's done well. And again, thanks, George, for writing the foreword. I'm on the radio with my two great foreword writers. You can't beat that.
Well, I'm glad you got it.
Catherine Lee Scott, and Who Believes in Roswell, George Norrie.
Catherine, thank you for being on the program. Frank, you as well. Good luck with all your works. And we'll be back with Open Lines in a moment.